Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Ernest, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
All right, guys. Welcome back. EYL International.
We back. Edition.
Yes.
We,
yes.
We back north.
Yes, that's a fact. Game of Thrones, what did they say? The North. What
the they North.
We the North. Yeah, we say we are the North. That's a whole city slang now.
Yeah. So if you don't,
yeah, we the North is the Raptors version of it. We the North.
Yeah.
Yeah. The North remembers and all that.
Yeah. The North. North. Ned Stark. Ned Stark. Right.
With yeah.
The North.
Ned. Yeah. And Jon Snow, the bastard child.
Jon Snow. Shout out to Jon Snow. So yeah, Earn Your Leisure. The good thing about Earn Your Leisure is that, you know, it started in Choice. Basement, Choice living room.
We're still here.
Yeah, right outside, right outside of New York City. Shout out to Greenberg, and now we reached all over the world. It's crazy what you can do with an iPhone, and you know, we have a huge listenership not only in America, but pretty much everywhere. And our second biggest market outside the United States is Canada, specifically Toronto,
the great city of Toronto.
That's a fact. So you know, we made it an initiative this year to try to do more content relative to people in other markets. Mm-hmm. And Toronto is number one on our list. We got a dope event planned for Toronto whenever this quarantine lets up.
I can't wait.
You got to pull up to that if you're in town. So our guest today was just like a no-brainer. He actually commented on my post, and I realized that he was following me, and I was like, oh, this is dope. So I hit him up. I'm like, yo, you interested in coming on the podcast? He's like, yeah, for sure. Let's set it up. And, you know, within a couple of weeks, we got it set up. So if you are a fan of music, like
yeah, music, Troy, period.
Me and Troy, y'all, you definitely know this gentleman's name. So Director X is his professional name, but his birth name is Julian Christian Lutz. And he used to, previously before Director X, it was Little X. Mm-hmm. And I mean, resume just reads like a who's who. He's worked with everybody from Usher, Jay-Z, Sean Paul, Nelly Furtado, Justin Bieber, Kanye, Drake, Nicki Minaj, T.I. He did most recently Drake and Future's Life is Good video.
Love that video.
He did French Montana's famous video, Drake and Rihanna.
I was about to say, you left Rihanna out of that? He did Rihanna's first video.
Umbrella?
From the replay.
Okay.
Yeah. That's not as good.
Drake Hotline Bling. That's classic material.
That's one of my son's favorite videos of all time.
Drake Started from the Bottom. We can go on.
Yeah, a lot. Hell yeah, effing right is, I mean.
Yeah, the list goes on.
20 plus years of music video,
y'all. Yeah. That's a lot.
But not only music videos, he also has three movies under his belt, Across the Line, On Point, and Superfly.
Yeah, shout out to Lovebird. Tawan love that movie. Yeah. Tawan loves that movie.
One of our friends, that's his favorite. That's his favorite movie.
TV movies, so I don't know if you can count that one, but Across the Line and Superfly, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, okay. And then also, you helped out on one of our favorite all-time
classic
movies, Belly.
Classic.
Belly. Yes, that's a classic. That's a classic for sure. So, yeah, you know, this is going to be a dope conversation. We're going to cover a variety of different topics that we haven't covered before. As far as you know, being a director and being on the other side of the camera, capturing moments and capturing musicians and talent and actors and things of that nature. A lot of times people think they can only make a living in entertainment on one side, being an entertainer, but there's other sides to
the
it.
The person and that's capturing it.
Being a director is actually the most important thing. Yeah. Like, if you're not capturing that moment, it never happened.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what is magical about this story is, like, a lot of people think they have to be formally trained. But you're going to learn today, like, yo, sometimes some things come natural to you, and you just got to go what God's blessed you with.
Yeah, so before we start, pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For sure. So let's get right into it. So like I said, I mean, it's crazy because one of my friends, shout out to Greg Barnett, another EY alumni.
T-Bow.
He hit me up like a couple weeks ago, like, are y'all planning to have any directors on, any movie directors, anything like that? I'm like, it's funny you say that. I actually just spoke. So I'm interested to know because – There's a professional, I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like there's a professional path to get into being a director, and then there is the alternative path. So the professional path is like going to college, like you can go to
studying
film school and all of that. And then the other alternative path is networking, you know, working your way up, internships, and I guess they kind of both combine, but we see a lot of, especially in our culture, like, you know, Jim Jones used to direct videos. Did you know that?
Yeah, for Dipset.
Yeah. So what was your path into becoming one of the greatest directors in hip hop history? Like, how did you go from living in Toronto, Canada,
Brampton to be exact,
being you know, being world known,
B-Town.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
So doing logos, so I started doing flyers, and then I started doing logos. I was known around the city. I went everywhere. This is when hip hop, everyone had a backpack. So my backpack was filled with art. I'd have my stuff, I'd go to a party, I'd find the party promoter, I'd say, who does your flyers? My line was, who does your flyers? So, he sucks, I'm better. didn't know who, I'd never seen his, I didn't know if I even saw it, but yeah, just the competition. So, that got me going down the path of, I want to be a graphic designer, I thought I was going to be a graphic designer. So, there's a part of this where I tell people, especially young people, follow your interests. Well, I was interested in drawing, and then I was interested in hip hop, and then hip hop and drawing got me drawing the flyers for hip hop parties, right? And then I wanted to make those flyers better, so then I started getting into computer programs so I could print out. So now I'm doing graphic design work, I'm doing stuff, and then I was able to get that program, you know, as computers got more and more. My father worked at Toshiba, so I think I got the program. Somehow I started learning the program. So I used to have to go to friends' homes to use it at first. I'd have to travel very far to use this program. But CorelDRAW was the program, but I learned graphic design, the basics of how you work, something like that. I'm still like 15, 16. Then I move out of my home real young, and I'm living in my friend's basement studio. So they're all there making hip hop. They want to be rappers. I start writing some rhymes for them. I go to a poetry reading with a friend of mine that reads poetry, and at the end say, if anyone wants to come up, come up. I go up and read a rhyme I wrote for my friend. They say, hey, I like that thing you wrote, come to another one. So now I'm a graphic designer, poetry guy. Okay? So I'm going, dude, I mean, and this is again, follow your interest.
Yeah.
Not everything needs to be a big, and I feel like the pressure now is everything is a master plan to success. No one's just saying, do you like to sing? Then fucking sing. Do you like to draw? Then draw. Do you like to paint? Paint. Who gives a fuck if you're going to be, like, there's this undercurrent of our culture that if you're doing something to not be the most successful person in the world, then what are you doing?
Right.
You're rapping just to rap. You're not rapping. No, I just like the rap. I like it. I'm not bad. Like, I doesn't mean I'm trying to, maybe I'll do a show. Whatever comes from it. Do what interests you. Right. So I'm probably 17 now. I'm doing graphic design and art, and I think I'm going to be a graphic designer when I grow up. Now, shit, before that, when I was in junior high, in the first year of high school, I thought I was going to be a comic book artist. So I was comic books, hip hop. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I just keep, but it's always evolving. It's always art and expression. So there's a show up here called Rap City. This is before you guys had Rap City on TV. And that was our video channel up here. And they do a poetry episode. So I come in, a bunch of us are reading poems, and I read a poem. And as they're doing the show, and I'm looking around the studio, and I say to the producer, hey, there's a guy out here named Big C. Big C now in the music industry, but Big C was an intern at Much Music. He was on the scene and always around, and he was working. We thought he was working at Much Music, and now he's a unit assistant, right? So he's doing an internship, but we didn't know that. So everyone thought Big C was rich because he went to go inside Much Music.
So for us, Much Music, in my mind, is like what TRL was for y'all? For us, was MTV. So it was MTV. Yeah.
MTV. Much Music's MTV.
Okay.
And this is Rap City. So I'm looking around. I go, yo, and I knew C had got a job at BMG. He'd stepped up in the world. But what happened to Big C's job? She goes, oh, no one's doing that. I go, I want to do it. She goes, okay. And next thing I know, I'm the intern at Much Music. I'm carrying lights and shit. I'm the intern at Much Music. I'm doing Rap City, another show called Soul in the City. All that. So now while I'm there, I look at the cameras and the lights and go, hey, this is interesting. This is creative. Maybe I'll get into like TV or a film. And at the same time, I'm also looking at music videos because this was just when Hype Williams was showing up.
Mm-hmm.
So when I would be at home watching Rap City, there'd be these certain videos just didn't look like it, just looked better, felt special. Wu-Tang, Can It Be So Simple?
Yeah.
Flavor in Your Remix.
Classics.
Class. Who's this guy?
Yeah.
And then, Vibe Magazine does a little one pager on him. So at this time, so now I'm doing logos, and for my school project, what I decided when I get signed, I want to be a director, and I'm watching Hype's work. I go to school and I make my I do my final year a video. I make it a music video, so I have my contacts. So I take one of my poems that I did with a friend, and we make a video about it, right? And it's actually a story about, this kid getting shot at school because, people are talking shit and whatever. So the misunderstanding of violence. And see how it all comes together. I got my poem, I got my artistic sense, I got the Much Music internship. So I'm able to shoot the performance with one of their ENG cameras, one of the cameras they shoot the news with.
Mm.
Right, so I have a higher quality performance. I shoot the narrative with a handy cam. And then every night for about a week or two, I would go in at Much Music. This is before heavy security. They thought I still worked there, even though my internship was done. I would go in after hours and work on the machines and put together my edit. So your edit, I would do it by hand. Right? So I'd be watching it, I'd do the lyric, and I'd write out. And I did down to the frame, the in mark and the out mark. So editors understand the insanity of what this is for a full 3-minute and 50-second piece. 001-02-14-.
Yep.
Yep. 01, but you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
All the tapes, because I learned my lesson from doing an edit unprepared. I did one of my projects in my internship. This editor who's going to help me edit this project I did with him, and I just walked in with tapes, and he didn't have time, and we just kind of, so this time I walked in with paper.
Yeah.
2 weeks preparing it, going through the edit session, handed the paper, we assemble it. I got, this is back in the days, there was no you singing a song and then making a music video where you're lip syncing it. That was impossible. Unless you have professional equipment, that could not happen. Period, end of story. If you were going to edit something together, you had your two VHS tapes, and you played one, and you get wired in the other, and you pause it, and like, you know what I'm saying? That we do this crude kind of stuff. But now, my thing with the Much Music people, I got slow motion, I got souls, I'm lip syncing. Shit we all take for granted, shit we can do on our phone. I needed a full-on multi-million dollar edit bay and a multi-million dollar TV station to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and so you taught yourself all these skills?
No, I'm in there with the editor.
Oh, okay.
Remember, I'm just an intern. They wouldn't even let me breathe in that room without someone in there to look over me.
Okay.
Right? So I'm in there with the editor, but I made these relationships. So I had my performance shot had a better quality because I made a relationship with the cameraman. I had an edit that was a professional edit because I made a relationship with the editor. But now I got this piece. So I got this videotape. At the same time, I was also, I screen printed a bunch of t-shirts with some of my art. And of course I had a kind of like a 4-page portfolio of my logos and my flyers, and my just the things I draw. So I discover Hype Williams, I see the article in Vibe magazine. I write Vibe magazine. I write Mimi Valdez. Y'all know Mimi Valdez?
Nah.
Nah, I don't know.
Mimi, she manages Pharrell. She's one of these producers of Hidden Figures.
Okay. All right?
Just so again, I tell these kids, people you meet, this is over 20 years ago. The people you meet in the game, you're going to know. A good deal of people you're rubbing shoulders with right now, you will keep on rubbing shoulders with for 20, 30 years. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Andre Harrell and Russell Simmons, how long have they been friends? 34 years?
Yeah,
rest in peace.
It's all about relationships.
Exactly, that's how this goes. So now, I have a poetry video edited professionally. It looks like, hey, this looks like some kid that got some talent. I got a t-shirt with a screen printed art of mine. I got a little package of my art, and I write a letter. Hey, I want to, you know, I want to intern for Hype Williams. How do I get a hold of them? Right? Send this whole package. Don't hear back. So then I finally just call because the number is in there. So I call Vibe magazine and I say, I get Mimi. Okay, if I want to get something to Hype Williams, who should I send it to? I knew I was smart to know back then I shouldn't ask for Hype Williams. So she gave me like Akilah Turner and a phone number to their office and hung up on me. Not rudely, but that was enough. I'm lucky I got my little. So now I got the number to the office and the person. Now I'm calling the office. I send them the package. And I actually sent it to another friend of mine who was working for a director. I can't even remember his name. And she never, I didn't know it, but she didn't send him my, she didn't show him my. So again, don't, this when you're young, you expect something from your friends. Don't. Don't expect shit from anybody, but don't expect shit from your friends. Don't think that the people you work with are your friends and then therefore should be doing the things you think your friends should do for you. Stop all that shit right now. Save yourself the headaches. Save yourself the heartaches. If people are cool with you, because guess what? People who see you, you don't have to be a friend who fucking say, hey, you got a talent, kid, come here. That's not what, people don't do that because they want to be your friend. They do that because, kid, I like you. Come work over here. You can help me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So my friend doesn't even, which is good. But if I'm learning under that guy, who knows where I be, right? So like I said, I can't even remember his name. Not a disrespect, but I can't. So
forever remain nameless.
Yeah. But again, it's a good lesson in friendship. The girl's incredible. She's good, but you can't. Don't expect your friends to also somehow be your, I don't know what, be your parent, be your business manager. I don't know what the fuck, but they're your friends. Let that be. In my crew, we have a thing like you're fired. See you at the barbecue. Really friends.
Like
this
that.
Job, you know what I'm saying? Yep. Like, that didn't work out, but you know, barbecue at 3. You know what I'm saying? I thought we were friends. Then, you know what I'm saying? So, that's the test. This ain't working out, homie. This ain't the job for you. But it's Saturday.
Still love you.
Is that real? Can your friendship survive that? So, anyways, now I got the package, I sent it to Hype, I'm calling him, and the universe is good. Around that time, I had a summer job with Cardinal Official. He had organized this, like, they had a
Toronto legend.
We had this summer. We had a riot out here, so that you need some shit. So they gave us there's like these jobs in the arts, and great lesson in investing in the arts. You might hear, like, we're gonna pay a bunch of black kids to make music and all that kind of stuff, and you said, what the fuck, we're gonna waste the money. And no, damn near 90% of those kids, a good kids, ended up in the entertainment business, working, producing. I became a director. I left town, I came back, I brought millions of dollars to the city. Cardinal has put the city on the map, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So investing in the arts and investing into your children is a good idea. They go on to do this work. So I was in a program like that, and Cardinal organized a trip to New York. So the New York trip was, you know, we'd go see record labels, and I get out, I'm on my hustle. I got my backpack full of work. So we're like, hey, we're gonna go see, you know, Loud Records. And we'd be walking and talking to someone, I'd say, hey man, can I show you something? Yeah, sure. And I'd show them my video. Can I show you something? I showed it. If I saw a moment, I'll show you something. And I'm always surprised that in the years since everyone can have a reel on their phone, there's maybe, I can think of two kids who came up to me and said, look at this on my phone. And one of them was just a few months ago, and the one before that was years ago. You know what I'm saying? Now, I sometimes don't like to put kids on the game, because if you weren't doing this, and now you heard me do it, now you're going to, like, some of this should be in you. You know what I'm saying? And you gotta have to work on yourself and work on your own, like, really, if you got the hustle, to figure it out. You know what I'm saying? But either way, I would walk in these offices. I have my tape. I have my backpack. I have everything on me at all times. I could make you a party flyer on the spot, showing people my work, doing the thing. But now I'm also in New York. I'm calling up Hype's office. Have you looked at it? And then one day I call, and they say, not yet. Whenever I call, they say, not yet. So, okay, well, you got it, but you haven't watched. And one day I call, they're like, we don't even know who you are. What? So we don't know what you're talking about. Oh, really? Oh, cool. So I call up another, hey, what's the address there? And the guy gives me the address, goes, wait, what's up?
It's too late. I just want somebody to hit and see my tape.
Yeah, where's the tape? Where's the shirt? Where's all that shit? Give it back.
I'm a knee.
So, hey, again, man, go with this. Go with your young energy. You're too young to know your mistakes, so you just fly and through shit. You know what I'm saying? So I go to the office. There's one person in the office. I go, you're watching this. Someone's watching this.
I'll go fuck.
So it's like the receptionist is at the desk. She's the only one there. Like, yo, you're watching. I don't give. This is it.
Yeah, the dude there. Yeah, he's the only one in the office. You're watching this. Someone's watching this.
That's a fact. I mean, that's the kind of energy that you gotta have. Like, yo, it's not, you can't take no for an answer.
Yeah, you take pride in what you did. I mean,
artists want people to see their art.
Yeah.
You look. So he looks at it in slow motion and dissolves and tells you, the fuck is this? You should wait a minute. Chelsea's coming back. Someone, you need to show the producer. So Chelsea shows up. And again, Chelsea, I just worked with Chelsea the other day because she's working in Atlanta with Tyler Perry. People you know from
yeah, 30 years
from the beginning, yep. Yeah. And now they all over the world doing amazing
all
things.
All over the world, and so hey, hit me up. Hey, X, you got a minute? I need you. Like, these are relationships. This is all important. Chelsea looks at it, and I say to her, I know I'm good enough to work for free.
Powerful.
That's powerful. Powerful. I don't want that powerful. To go. People say I'm not, because a lot of times people don't want to do that either. They don't want to right out the gate. They want to get compensated. And there's nothing wrong with being compensated, but right. Sometimes it's like you have to do internships. Sometimes you have to. Not get compensated at first,
yeah.
So you can get compensated on the back end.
And you took it to another level. You said, I'm good enough to work for free. Like, I'm going to work for free, and I'm good enough to do it. Let me in. Let me in the door.
What's your excuse? Yeah.
Like, yeah, you are. Okay, show up. So she said, come back in a month. I come back to Toronto, and it's like I'm in a small town. Everybody, yo, bro, you know, all my time is like, you know,
eh?
Working on music, you know, and I'm like, I got to
we got to put this in context, because people, they think Toronto is this amazing, and it is an amazing place, but this is prior to the Drake and the OVO movement in the Weeknd,
yeah,
way prior to this. No
one, way before.
No one,
right.
No one, and no one did from that era.
Right, and we said...
We said Carnell, but people don't even know who that is. So Carnell Fisher was a big deal.
At that point, Carnell was doing like, you know, Carnell's my generation, like a little older generation. So there's people trying to make music. Things are going on, a little truck, but is still a pipe dream. It's still rough. Either way, I come back and I'm just like, I gotta go. It doesn't feel like anyone's doing anything. You just know when you get that small town.
Yeah.
I gotta go. So I leave 2 weeks early. I come back to New York, and Chelsea, the day I walk, see how God is and how you have to trust your instinct. The day I walk in the office was the day Chelsea had quit. So the executive producer, Akila, looks at me. And she sits down and goes, I don't know who you are or what this is. I don't know what's going on. Because hey, I thought you were supposed to be an intern. What? Is it, right? So I did a George Costanza. I just showed up the next day.
With my time card.
The beauty of black-owned, small black business is you know, they're making these videos. The shit's so crazy. They said, all right, he's here. And then I'm like, so I just started working. I just showed up and went to work. I'm here. You know what I'm saying? And at that time, I'm staying by my aunt in East Flatbush. She literally, the only TV with cable was the one in their bedroom. The other TV was like an old school, like radio, air over the air. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, turn the knob, antennas, all that.
Yes, you get ABC, CBS in the kitchen. So like uncomfortable. So there's no getting lost in TV. There's no getting lost in technology. I touched their computer once, and like, you know, I'm doing all this stuff. They don't want to do my mother's best friend. She's like, yo, don't ever touch the computer again, because I couldn't. So they don't want me on the computer. They don't want me watching their TV. They're just, you can sleep here. I'm in a little room. Also, make your guest room a little uncomfortable. Don't make lavish guest rooms when young hip hop boys, because your homeboys are going to think that's their room. So I'm staying in an uncomfortable guest bedroom and nothing to do when I get home. So I just spent all my time in the office. And then I look around the office and say, yo, your tapes, because it'd be, okay, go get, again, the stacking of knowledge. I was an intern at Much Music, a national TV station. They had a tape library system, like an old school one, like when you go to the old school library, go through things. Big Dog, that was the name of Big Dog Films. At Big Dog, the tapes are all in a box in the corner. And they just go find the Wu-Tang video. You just go searching like a fucking scavenger hunt. Spend all this time. And then they came in the office one day, and there's suddenly all the tapes are on shelves with stickers on them. And I had a little thing. Well, if you're looking for a tape now, what you do is you look up, and then this card has the code. So a Digibeta is a CLE. A half inch is a three-quarter tape is that. So I had all the codes, and they're like, who the fuck is this kid? They leave and come back, and all the furniture would be rearranged. Because the way they used to have it is that the door would open, and people would go in, but the desk was here. So here's the door, and here's the desk. And people would just walk by the desk. So one day they came, and the desk was here, and here's the door. So now you walked in and met a receptionist, and there's chairs. You feel me?
Yeah.
I was constantly doing shit like this. I didn't ask anybody. They just come in and some new shit had happened to the office, but it was better.
yeah.
So in this now, I begin, then I meet Hype, and I'm always drawing, and I'm always doing, and they see my drawings. And then eventually, I'm getting frustrated, I'm PAing, you know, I'm PAing on sets, and then they say, we want no more interns, because at the same time, if I was with Hype until 2, 3 o'clock in the morning working on something, I'm not showing up at 10. I was with Hype, he's the boss.
Yeah. How was that first interaction when you finally met him? Like, you had been trying to get them to see a tape.
Let me get some, because people might not know who Hype William is, because we got a lot of young people that listen to this.
That's true. So. Very true. Nah, this generation is different,
Hype,
man.
Hype Williams is like, I guess you could call him the godfather of the million-dollar budget videos. Like, the once upon a time, music videos are still important, but music videos were very, very, extremely important.
Everything.
In the 90s, in the early 2000s, and Hype Williams was... He was it. He was
the go-to guy.
Yeah, he was the go-to guy for any of those Bad Boy videos, Nas, Jay-Z.
He was the first one that the average hip-hop person said, there's a director.
You knew.
The first time that there was a director's name.
Yeah.
And he had a great hip-hop name, Hype Williams. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the first one. And before that, no one, there weren't even directors.
Like the Spike Lee of music videos.
Yeah, like when you saw a Spike Lee joint, you knew it was Spike Lee. Yeah. When you saw a Hype Williams video, you knew it was it because it looked different. It looked like nothing else. It was high production. It was a movie.
I remember. I think
it was a movie. It was artistic. It was beautiful, but it was still true to the culture.
Yeah. I think it was Nas or Diddy, one of these guys, and they was like, you know, a Hype. He would do a video in the projects and make you think it was Rome. Like the way he put it together, it just looked so intriguing to people, and it was incredible. Amazing, like the cinematography of it. It was just like, yo, this is the most amazing place in the world, and it could be like the gutter.
Yeah, I feel like he's the reason they made that they used to have that show Making a Video on MTV. It was like because you had to see the behind the scenes of what he was actually doing to put out these masterpieces.
Yeah, and again, he's a cool dude from Queens. He was hip hop. He really was the culture. It all came together. It was real art. Like now we get it, like you know, with the Kanye's and the Virgil, and like we. Artists, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's in that zone. So, you know, he came in one day and was like, oh, it built. It wasn't like, hey, kid, you're a genius. Right? So I know everyone wishes they got the, hey, kid, you're a genius, but a lot of us don't. So building, relationship builds, finally say, start drawing storyboards. So now I'm not an intern anymore. I'm drawing storyboards. Now I'm getting paid. Now I can buy a little watch. Now I can buy a little clothes. You know what I'm saying? I was able to leave my aunt's house. I got apartment now. Well, you know, I'm sharing a room.
So the storyboard is like the treatment for the video?
No, the storyboard is drawing it out. It's part of the sales pitch or what we're going to shoot.
Okay.
So that goes.
It helps people understand what it's going
to
be.
That goes back to your. I'm thinking like previous knowledge now. Like when you were doing comic books, this kind of prepared you for this moment.
Completely. It all comes together.
Got you.
Right. And this is before like you couldn't just get on a computer and whip up a treatment the way you get a pitch deck in a second.
Yeah.
To do something like a normal pitch deck that you get on a thing and get a PDF, you'd have to print it out. It would cost hundreds of dollars. Because commercials did that. When you did in those days, when you did a commercial treatment, you did the thing and then you printed it and sent it to the client. It would cost hundreds of dollars to do these things. So, and that's just the print of the writer. It was very expensive to do. But anyways, so back then a treatment was just a written document. You got a typed out page and you had to imagine it.
So the treatment, for people that might not know, the treatment, correct me if I'm wrong, is the step-by-step of what actually happens. Like I wake up, I brush my teeth, I go to it's like you're writing out play-by-play what's going to visually be seen.
It's the script.
I feel like it's the script, yeah.
Yeah, a script, but not really, not what there's a visual script.
I wrote you a treatment.
To a degree, it's like, you're making the client understand what video I want to make for you is this.
Yeah.
Right? And whichever way you explain. So, in those days, now a treatment has pictures and all this shit, again, with the technology. Back then, you faxed them, a printed out, that was what you got. You got a paper with words on it in a fax machine. And then I came on, so now you got a storyboard, you got pictures. Someone drew pictures. Oh, this is what it's going to be. And then you sometimes need the storyboards to explain to the crew, this is what we're doing. This is what happens there. You know what I mean? Big production, big movies, they storyboard out action scenes. It's like, this is just how production works. So I'm a storyboard artist, right? And I'm always with him. Now I'm with him going, you know, I'm with him when he's working on stuff, when he's color correct. I'm just with him, soaking up knowledge. But when I used to run packages, we used to work a lot with Def Jam. I used to run packages to Def Jam, Rockefeller, and Bad Boy all the time. So there's people who know me as the guy who ran the package. The beauty of the music industry is that the interns become the so-and-so to become that in that. If you don't want to get paid, you don't want to, if you are like, I don't get paid, I'm not coming in. I mean, everyone's on a different path. But in those days, the way you got in was saying, I'm working for free.
Yeah.
And now you're in, and they see that you're good, and then up you go. So again, a whole bunch of my friends that are still in the game, that are still working in the music video on the label side, do the hiring of the directors. We're interns together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's the story Puff and Andre Harrell. That's the story. I spoke to Shari Bryant, same thing. She was an intern at Rockefeller.
Kenny Burns.
Yeah, they interned, and now she's the co-head of Rock Nation, and like you said, Kenny Burns. They don't really understand internships and the value of them and the value of, like you said, being able to work for free and then grind your way all the way up. It's just a thing. It's like a lost talent at this point.
It is. In the film side, I get asked a lot still. But the way I get asked is what I feel is lacking. But either way, so now I've been running packages. I'm doing storyboards. Everyone knows me as Heights Die. And over at Def Jam, they have Cormega.
Cormega. Cormega.
Yeah, and I was coming back to Toronto and shooting videos.
Okay.
So that's another key. I come back to Toronto, and again, back to your friends. People know you one way. So they knew me as a guy who drew and did poetry. And I come back like, hey, I'm directing now. I'm working with Hype Williams. They're like, yeah.
Sounds good.
This other guy's hot. And I was really, again, thinking in my younger mind, you know me, you should, because people know you don't mean they're going to do shit to you. Because they're your friends don't mean they're going to do shit. Ain't no reason for no one to do shit to you. You know what I'm saying? You're bitter and angry, and how could they? And who gives a shit? And again, the way the universe works, if I had done work with them, I would have felt beholden to them. Because my old loyalty thing, right, would have, what I was expecting for them, I would have done, you know what I mean? Hey, I know you, let me help you. Save all that. So no one in my hometown wants to give me a shot. Cool. I don't owe nobody nothing either. And no one can say shit to me. So finally, someone gives me a break. I co-direct something with a guy, and I make my first video. Then for my first video, I go and talk to a couple of street men that are trying to do the management thing, and they go and, I gas them up, and we do another. I do one of their videos. I got two videos. Show those two videos that I did in Toronto to Steve Carr, who was one of the directors at Big Dog Films. He makes a call on my behalf. This is what you want to happen, right? He makes a call over a big label, says, this kid's really talented. You should give him a joint. He gives me, so I get the Tracy Lee, Busta Rhymes, Pirate MC video, this remix song.
So where did Cormega come into play?
This comes later.
Okay.
I got to back off of this. So I do this video. Mark Pitts is for Bystorm Records.
Yeah.
Mark Pitts, again, just saw him on the set of Usher.
Yeah.
Everyone's
big manager, Usher manager.
Usher's manager. So not that everyone you meet is going to be around, but a hell of a lot of people you meet are going to be around. A lot of them. So Mark Pitts gives me this shot. They believe, and I shoot this video. It's a white background video, and I fucked it all up. It's good enough to be like a video on TV, like no one, but it wasn't great. No one watched that video and said, who did this? And I was devastated after I did it. I went home devastated. I fucked it up. I did all this, and I'm going to be sucky. I'm going to be shitty, whatever. And I was able to call Hype and Alan Ferguson. Alan Ferguson was a DP. He married Solange. And Hype is Hype. And Hype gave me a big pep talk. Adam gave me a lot of technical stuff, which was helpful. But Hype gave me the pep talk that feeling that you suck, you got to fight that. Feeling that you're not good enough, you need to fight that. Right? And then, you know, again, the philosophy of the music video, it needs to be about something. I didn't quite understand that at the time, but it needs to be about something. Okay. And then from that, I go to the bookstore and start, because before I was hanging with Hype and wasn't really studying, kind of like what I said about the editor when I wasn't prepared. And then the next time I said, okay, now I see the mistake, let me go get it right. So I looked at it and said, okay, standing beside Hype is not, it's helpful, but that's not learning. And and you have that as a director. A bunch of your friends are like, they came and they see you doing it. They're like, I can do this. This looks easy. No, motherfucker, you can't. But what they say, that you're paying for the 10,000 hours. You're not paying for my time. You're paying for the time it took me to do this like this. You know what I'm saying? You know that saying?
Yeah.
10,000 hours.
Yeah, so I had not studied. So in this depressed state, I go to the bookstore and buy books about filmmaking. Lights, this, I bought everything, hair, make, I bought everything. Because the beauty of growing up growing up as a director around Hype is that he knew every department. So to me, that's what a director meant. You know every department. Hype would walk in and talk to the makeup, and then he'd talk to the hair and have detailed conversations with them. Then walk over here and talk to the art department, then talk to the DP. And every single department, he's having intricate, knowledgeable conversations about their department. So I said, okay, that's what I need to do. So I got a book on hair and makeup. I got a book on lights. I put all these books, and I start reading it. And then Cormega now is going to go do this little, back then you pay some money for a promo thing. So like, hey, Cormega wants to do this promo thing. We don't got a lot of money. X, you want to do it? Somehow I get it. Because again, I have relationships with Def Jam. I've been running packages and I directed a few things. They say, okay, it's pennies that they got. But I got this shot to shoot this thing for Cormega. And his idea was kind of whatever with the relationships. But we were going to make a scene from, I was going to make it. He wanted to do the interrogation scene from Scarface. I wanted to look like the interrogation scene from Clockers, if you remember that.
Clockers.
That's your movie.
One of the best movies
That's one of his favorite movies.
Ever, all time.
Remember that? When they're interrogated, everyone's kind of glowing, bright glowing.
Yeah.
Malik Said shot that. And again, Hype worked with Malik, so I had this relationship. I called Malik and said, how did you do that? And he gave me some pointers. So now I got technical knowledge. We got their scene. I'm going to shoot the Cormega scene. And the lesson is you give do the client what they ask for, but make it yours. So I made it mine. So I shoot that scene, but I also did, all right, give me half a record, and I'm going to shoot a little music video. So I shoot his commercial, but then I shoot a little music video, and I gel it, and I'm now, as I'm doing it, I remember I looked at a light, well, scrim that light. I stop. I go, oh, fuck. I said that super technical thing, and I'm right. All that reading had seeped into my knowledge. A scrim for filmmakers, a scrim is a disc that, so you have a light, a scrim goes in front of it to knock the light down. Basically a dimmer, but it don't have, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Certain lights don't, so it's technical film shit, scrim that light. And I'm like, oh fuck. It had seeped in, I had finally understood it. And that, then I finally made something I liked. I made something good. I had my knowledge, I was on my way. The preparing, the studying, the opportunity, all the things, taking something that's given to me, making it something that I can work with. These were the beginning steps of me really knowing and learning. So it's not just enough to be around. When you get hired, you got to do good work. You got to constantly working to improve. And that was the knowledge base. So from there, I was constantly pulling references, studying this, studying that, studying other directors. So just there's a constant watch of the people you want to achieve a level of success as, or whatever it is, it's your marker, like that person. I want to get to that level and working to reach that level.
Yeah, you said that, I heard you say this before, like a good director can see when a director has not made a good product, right? There are certain things that a good director will know visually when they look at the product. What are some of those things that you see right away? It's like, you know what? They didn't take time to do this, or it's lacking this. What are some of those things?
I can tell how intelligent a director is by their work. Give me three music videos. I know if you're intelligent. I don't know if you can tell a story. I can tell your visual aesthetic, your visual talent. A lot of stuff I can tell just on the way they direct things.
So as far as on the business side, so the budget, right? This is something I was always interested, especially, I don't know what the budgets are now, but that's a question. But before that, so when it was $1 million, this is another thing that young people might not know. There used to be like $1 million movie videos.
Yeah.
And it was like spinning, like that was like the, I think Hype had like the first $1 million. Was it with Diddy on the Hypnotize? Was that Hypnotize?
That was $1 million. I think Busta Rhymes might have been
Busta
like
Rhymes,
the first one.
Yeah. But Diddy had the $1 million joint with the Hypnotize and all that. So where do budgets come from? Does that come out of the artist's pocket, or are the label fronting that?
That's when we get into the recoup thing, the infamous back when they sold CDs. So, it's kind of fucked up. Record companies, they invest in you, but they want to, well, it is how it is. They invest, but they want the money back. They want their money back on the investment, but you're the investment. So you don't see money till they get their money back. Mm. But of course, the way these big corporations do accounting is they never make money back. Like Star Wars, by the accountant, has never made money. Star Wars has never made money, right? You know what I'm saying? You never get, no matter how many records you sell, you just never see, but you have to recoup it. So those $1 million budgets, that's your money essentially, right? I mean, like if your shit flops, they're not going to chase you down and like take your house and home, you know what I'm saying? Like make you work for the rest. They bite the bullet if it doesn't work out. But if the shit works out, they want their money back.
Yeah, so at this time, are you feeling pressured to make sure that this product takes off, or are you just like, you know what, I'm gonna do my best work?
No, yeah, the pressure isn't like I gotta show up for them. The pressure is that I gotta do good work for me because I'm competing against other directors. So directors are already in their own competition. You know what I mean? So it's in their own, like now there's Hype, Williams, Paul Hunter, Chris Robinson, Liberal X, Benny Boom, Eric White, Dave Myers. You know what I'm saying?
Like Dave Myers. Wow, I forgot that name.
There's a regular set of names
you
see at the bottom of those screens. Fat Cats. And there's tons of people. So you were all in those battles together. And everyone kind of had like, you know, me and Chris Robinson, that was the back and forth. Hype Williams and Paul Hunter, that was the back and forth. You know? Everyone had their back and forth that they did. And that's the competition. Because, look, man, if you, in those days, if you did a shitty video for a hit record, you could live off that. You're going to get a bunch more work. But eventually, people are going to see that your videos all suck and you're going to die off. the key is to do good work even for bad songs. And then you, when you get a good song and you do good work, that boom, hit song, dope video, off. You know what I'm saying?
So
you got it bad with a hit record. You got it bad with a massive video, off.
So let me ask you this, because it's interesting as far as like making the comparison between music and movies. So So you Hype Williams, you guys, you have your own company, right? So if somebody wants to commission you, Diddy wants to commission you for a video, right? And it's $1 million budget back then. How does that work? They give you $1 million, then you have to break it down and actually pay item by item and do it, or?
So the way it works is, sorry, right from the beginning. Let's say the average way. So you guys have a record together, and you're signed to a record label, and they're gonna do a big record. We're gonna pay $1 million. For $1 million, they probably know who they want. But let's say they're bidding it. Normally you bid the job. So let's say they go to the top three, they take your record and they send it to the top three directors in the game. We got $1 million, we'll make the video, y'all write on it. So the top three directors all write a treatment. Oh, you're going to wake up in the morning, you're going to brush your teeth, and then there's like two girls that come in, you know what I'm saying, whatever.
Yeah.
Then there's a Ferrari, build a girl, you know what I'm saying, so whatever.
Don't forget the fireworks.
So now you get, fireworks and girls and cars. So three treatments you get, and you're going to read those treatments, and you say, who's the director? Okay, Hype Williams, and he wants to do this. Paul Hunter, he wants to do that. Well, so these things come in, and you have to decide between the level of director and their idea. Is their idea, or so, but either way, you finally pick one person. Okay? We want to do this treatment. That treatment has now become a contract. You said, I'm getting this. I'm gonna wake up in the morning, and there's girls and the thing, and then a Ferrari, and blah, 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 blah. That's a legally binding. Okay? And then you get your contract, and the contract, even in the contract says, we own up, this is a work for hire, don't ask us for money later. We own this. If they basically it says in there, like, if we discover a new galaxy, a new universe, and they like hip hop, don't ask us for money. Literally, that's the music industry contract. There's no situation in which you get fucking more money. So, whatever. You know, so you, and then they give you like they give you half the money. You do it. You get another bit. You finish it, and then they give you another bit, and that's how it goes. That is how a music video gets made.
So now, all right, so we talked about the era of the $1 million videos, but I'm interested to know this because it's like back then, I guess the goal was to be on BET or TRL or 106 in Park.
Rap City.
And now, you know, I hate to reference the kid, but it is what it is, you know, with this Tekashi situation, and he has, you know, even before he got arrested with Gummo and all those videos. And they was like doing crazy numbers on YouTube. Now YouTube is the thing, right? Where it's like now you just, the goal is to get 100 million views or 50 million views on YouTube. And especially when he first came out, I don't know what director he was using, but I'm assuming it was just a neighborhood director, Bobby Shmurda, like cell phone.
Same thing.
Produce, right?
Yep.
So I'm assuming that cut the budget for videos drastically because now you can make a video on your iPhone. It might not be the same quality, obviously. So my first question is, what's the top budget now that a record label would pay? And then the second question is, what is the goal now for, has it switched to YouTube? Has it switched to getting clicks on social media? Like, how has the times changed the business of actually producing videos?
I mean, now when you make a video, you make it, it goes out. Look, at the end of the day, yeah, Drake could make a video with his cell phone. But Drake ain't going to make a video with his cell phone. Drake wants a trailer. Drake wants drinks. Drake wants this. Drake wants that. He wants these people. Well, if you want to hire me, I work with these people. So this, my life. So yeah, I don't do cell phone videos. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
When I pull up, I'm doing a production. There's trailers and there's trucks and there's lights and there's unions and there's food and there's rules and it's going to cost you hundreds and thousands of dollars. Right? Taylor Swift wants a trailer and her makeup artist and her stylist and Raver, they're not doing it with a cell phone. She wants to look great. She wants the fucking guy who just shot the L'Oreal commercial. That's the DP. She wants to shoot her video. Well, guess what? He don't shoot on cell phones. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So as much as the technology is great that you can go and do something great and creative with you and your friends, but at the end of the day, the reality is the talent, you know, the cream rises to the top. And as it keeps on rising, so do the prices, right? So if you want that work that looks great, maybe you got lucky and your homeboy around the way is the next, you know, me, the next hype, the next, he's gonna, he's, it just so happens your homeboy has a career in filmmaking and he's super talented and gives you something great. That's amazing, but that's a rarity. I've seen a lot of these videos, you know?
Yeah.
Just kind of swinging the camera.
Yeah. It is what it is. Speaking of the Drake video, at the end of Life is Good, there's like a play on you know, he's directing it and you're kind of working for him. And that's something that you kind of stress as well, the difference between working for the artist and working with the artist. You want to talk about that? Because I know you highlight that a lot.
Yeah, look, man, it's a bit of semantics, but it's good to understand. Yeah, we're working with one another. But in reality, you need to know who you're working for and who you're working with. You feel me?
Yeah.
Drake is working with me. I'm working for Drake. I'm making his product. After I'm done, he takes it and goes away. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, in a proper group, it's a banter. We go back and forth, and it is a collaborative thing. But there are people who do forget. In these creative things, they get so caught up in making it theirs, they forget who hired them. They forget who they're working for. Yes, we're collaborating, but my art director isn't working with me. He's collaborating with me, but he's working for me.
So, just to double back. So, all right. So, even now today, mid six figures is still a price target that major artists would pay for a music video still to this day. Like, it hasn't dropped to the point where it's like $10,000, $15,000. Like, Drake is still paying his label, whoever.
Like I said, look what these videos do. Look, Life is Good. That video. Think for a moment, what would have happened if that record was just like a video of cars and girls and stuff? Where would it have gone? You feel me?
Yeah.
As opposed to just a little bit of a concept, just a little bit of fun, because this is entertainment. It is the entertainment business. You got you and your girls and the cars. Yeah, you're living your fantasy, but are you entertaining me? Are you putting work in? It's like going to a show and the guy's up there doing his fucking performing, and you're like, this guy ain't working. He's just kind of going through the motions. As opposed to someone who's, they're working, they're dancing, and you're like, motherfucker, put us on a show. Entertaining. The job is to entertain. So, yeah, no matter what money you spend, you better be trying to entertain people. That's the key. But at some point, entertaining people costs fucking money. So I got an idea. I'm in a garbage truck, and then I work in a fast food place. And I'm all right. Well, we got a vacation. I got to rent that. If you want that big idea, you got to pay the big money. That's just the way it is. And there's certain artists that they, when you're generating millions of views, 200 million, 500 million views, you can afford it, and it's a good investment. Because you understand? That was a great investment on Future's part. It's a great investment on his part to make a video that big. So. Like I said, bro, there's always going to be the top level, and at the top level, again, Taylor Swift ain't doing a cell phone video with some kid around the way.
So let me ask you this, because it's also the climate has changed to where, you know, it's a lot of independent artists, probably way more independent artists now than there were years ago in the 90s or 2000s. So from the artist standpoint, right, independent artist, I'm not signed to a label, I'm trying to get my buzz out there. What advice would you give? They don't have a budget to pay you or, you know, somebody of your caliber, but they still want to, you know, they have good quality music and they want to put some visuals to it. Would you recommend?
Find the most talented friend or find the most talented person that can work in your budget. Look at the work and say, what I want, you know, look at their work and say, what I want my work to look this way. We'll do the best you can with the money you got and entertain. The key has got to be that, are you entertaining? Is your video, are you trying to entertain? Are you putting your absolute most effort into entertain with the money that you got? Because these videos mean something. Back in the day, Madonna, Lenny Kravitz, Janet Jackson, there was a certain caliber of director they worked with, a certain caliber, certain budget range. Like, it says something, how you visually brought it to the world. And then as you make more money, you should be investing into your advertising. It's not a mistake that the Super Bowl, you know, technically they can do it with their cell phone. But the competition is entertainment during the Super Bowl. You better be bringing it with your fucking commercial. Well, you better be bringing it with your fucking video. You're in show business. You're in the entertainment industry. That doesn't stop. There isn't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You got to put this effort in. And like I said, when you can invest more money and it makes sense. Because I have people come to me, you know, yo, I can handle that 100, bro. I need 200. I got that. Yeah, but here's the thing, bro. Usher doesn't reach in his pocket and hand me $200,000. A record company said, I can make money with Usher. I'm putting up the 200 for the back end, how it comes back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there's got to make sense. Like, it's not, because what would happen a lot, there's almost like this secret industry of rich kids making music videos.
Oh, yeah?
Right? Every now and then, you know what I'm saying? Every now and then, just some kid's dad is a billionaire, and I did one. This kid, his manager was like, this kid spent more than Rick Ross had on one of his videos that I wore. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, big money, a big proper production with the trucks and the lights and the professional, like, it's a production. And the manager is J-Lo's manager, and like the dad had paid all these big name people, so the best everything. But the key element in the middle was J-Lo doesn't pay everyone to manage her. J-Lo has fucking talent, and everyone comes in because they see the potential. Then they invest, and then they get it back. So people confuse the look for the, oh, well, I got the same manager, and I got the same hair and makeup, I got the same director, I got spending more money. It's gonna be a hit.
You don't got the talent. It's not the talent.
So the sauce is sold separately.
Sauce sold separately.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if just now, let's say you got some money in your pocket and you can afford a big video, and a lot of artists, I see a lot of people hustling, thinking if I spend big money, I'll get the same results because I spent the same money. And no. You might have the money, but the level of artist you are, your amount of fans, where you're trying to build, it might make sense for you to make a $10,000 cell phone video. And do your best within that money to make a great piece of entertainment, you know what I'm saying? But just go spend hundreds of thousands of dollars when you don't have a fan base for that to make sense. There's shit the way up.
Now, you got your start interning with Hype. I'm wondering now, are there people that have interned with you that are now out here just crushing it, like killing the game as far as the video production?
Karina Evans. Karina directed God's Plan. Karina directed Nice for What. Karina's directing episodes of TV shows now. She's a 23-year-old, light-skinned black girl. Right at the time that everyone was like, we need more women and more women of color. And then she did God's Plan.
Video of the year.
God's Plan was that was a tough video.
Yeah, video
that
of the year.
Tough. That was tough.
Nice for What was up there too.
That was tough.
The credits on God's Plan is Director X presents a Karina Evans film.
That's tough.
Toronto Connections.
That's tough. So let me ask you this, because talking about that, and it, you would seem like making a 4-minute music video is a lot different than making a movie, right? So what's the difference between the movie side of things? Because you have movies under your belt as well. Being a director for a movie as opposed to being a director for a music video.
The amount of days. You shoot a music video of 1, 2, maybe 3 days, you will be over 30, 40 days. 50, maybe 100, depending on the type of movie, but on average, like 30 to 40 days for a proper Hollywood production. That's it.
What's the politics though? Because all right, so in like music video, it's like, okay, Drake wants you, Rihanna, especially now you got your name, they can kind of demand it. I would assume on the Hollywood side, it's harder, especially for like new, like if you're trying to do the independent, trying to get funding, and it just seems like that from the outside, it's more politics.
Well, yeah, it's harder because the investment is so big.
Yeah.
But look, here's the thing that a director needs to understand. The Oscar for Best Picture goes to the producer of the movie. You understand? Not the director.
Mm.
So what's the difference? What's the difference between the producer of the movie and the director of the movie?
The producer is the one who puts the deal together. The producer is the one who hires the people. The producer can fire you.
Right. So the producer can fire the director.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like they did that with Star Wars, correct?
No. George Lucas. George Lucas directed and produced it, but there's a, you know.
No, the later ones. I think they try to have somebody else do it, or maybe somebody else did it, and then J.J. Abrams came back and took over.
Yeah.
So can you kind of go over the hierarchy in movies? It's like, it's the producer, it's the director, the casting director. Like, what's the different roles that are on a movie set?
Well, say you have, let's say, like, Superfly. You have a studio, then you have a production company, and then you have the director. So Superfly, the producer, Joel Silver, he made The Matrix.
Yeah.
His company talks to my agent. We have this script for Superfly. My agent says, you should have Director X look at it. I read their script. I thought it was irresponsibly violent, and I told them I didn't want to do it. One, it was irresponsibly violent, and two, it wasn't Superfly. In this version, the first version of Superfly that I was sent, he wasn't trying to get out.
He was just like, all in, just...
He was trying to get in deeper. I'm okay. So I'm like, and then, like I said, it was irresponsibly violent. Like, they're having shootouts Miami Beach, and then I hit them like, yo, this is why black kids get in shootouts in shopping malls, because movies like this never have consequences. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, they just have shootouts and shot. They're just shooting out on Miami Beach, and they never say like, yo, better lay low. Not even that. Are there no video cameras? There's no surveillance cameras in your world? Are there no police?
That's interesting. That what Joel Siegel?
No, it's Joe Silver.
Joe Silver?
Yeah, Matrix.
Well, it's extremely interesting to me that why he wants to do a remake of Superfly.
Because he loves blaxploitation. He loved those eras.
The blaxploitation?
So then I find out what had happened was that the script they sent me wasn't actually Superfly, but they got the rights to Superfly, so they just put the name. And I'm like, I'm not one, the level of violence doing that. Two, this isn't Superfly. They called me back and said, we want to make the movie you want to make. I said, all right, well, we're making Superfly. So if you watch the old Superfly and my Superfly, it's Superfly. It's all the same characters are back. It's the same story. We move and twist some things around, but the things we move and twist around are still respectful of the original. I treated it like Hood Shakespeare. Right? Because I got hired to remake Superfly, so I'm going to remake it. Right, and then what we did on the violence side is that we made it a little cartoony. You know, the bad guys were white; they have white guns. It's an action. It's a Joel Silver action movie. A wit. It's Fast and Furious, and we deserve to have mindless, stupid movies. You feel what I'm saying? Like, no one watches John Wick and is like, "Oh my God, what message does this send to the youth and the Russian American community? How dare they?" It's just. The nigga can beat up everybody, and bad guys are fucking bad. And there's not, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's this imaginary world. Well, Superfly, yeah, it's drugs. In the same way Fast and Furious does heists. You feel me? There's no good advice for a drug dealer in Superfly.
No underlining.
That's a good idea. No underlining. Like, oh, you got something right there. Instead, things became symbolic. So what Snow Patrol was symbolic of flashy drug dealers. You know what I'm saying? You live in Cleveland and you ain't got a job, but you got a fucking Wraith. You might as well be wearing all white all the time. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I remember there was like on Instagram, there's one page I haven't seen in a while. You mad? I guess what happened? They're like the Coke Import Boys was the name of their crew. Like the Import Boys. I'm like, really? Pure sports cars, the Import Boys. I'm like, y'all, why don't you just drive yourself to jail? So that was what Snow Patrol represented. But again, he does kung fu. His hair is straight. I didn't want kids to look at Superfly and see their world. That looks like my life. That looks like my world. And then the subconscious brain starts going. You know, like the wrong movie gets hot in the hood. The hood gets hot.
Like Scarface.
Yeah.
Changed everything.
The Wire,
yeah.
The Wire, I remember when The Wire was popping. That, you know, it was inspirational to, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't want to do that. So ours is a fun, dumb, it's a Joel Silver action movie, right? Yeah. He doesn't have the social conscience that we have. You try here and there, but he wants to make a fun movie. Because he doesn't have a social conscience when he made Predator. He wasn't putting the weight of the world in his back when he made The Matrix. He was people kick people in the face and beat up the bad guys, and it's fun. Superfly is fun as fuck. It's a great, enjoyable movie. It's really a movie for teenage boys. 15-year-old you seeing Superfly, can you imagine how your brain would fry? The girls and the car and the house and the, like, you know, it's a great time for that, and that's what that is. But again, the politics of that is I'm directing a Joel Silver picture. Joel Silver isn't producing a Director X film, if that makes sense. The same thing. I'm working for
Joel. Right, you're working for him.
Joel is working with me.
Yeah.
That's important for people to understand, because it's like a lot of times they don't understand anything. Like a director, especially a movie director, it's like they have full rights over everything in it, and it's like they're like a quarterback.
You got the chair,
but you still got a coach that can kind of push in and make exactly. different things. Exactly. And so it's like
it's, you got a team owner. You got a team owner who can come down and say, "Yo,
exactly." There's a whole situation. Yeah,
definitely. Yes. I got a question as just as a fan of music and of movies as well. Like, we always in our heads, we hear a song and we're like, damn, like we kind of picture the videos in our head of how it should go. Has there ever been a video or a song that you were like, damn, I wish I had the opportunity to make that?
Some of them. More so, there's like songs that they didn't pick me and then they chose someone else and the video was horrible. I'm like, man, I would have gave you the fucking, you know what I'm saying? Would have given you the
So let me ask you this. Toronto, once again, shout out to Toronto. Toronto not only has a crazy music scene right now with Tory Lanez, Drake, The Weeknd, a bunch of people, and they just won the NBA championship 2 years ago, right?
Last year. Yeah.
But a little known fact, Toronto has a very big movie industry. Mm-hmm. Very big movie industry in Toronto. What's the scene right now in Toronto as far, well, obviously now COVID, everything is shut down, but for up and coming entrepreneurs, speaking specifically for people in Toronto right now, are there opportunities in the music, I mean, in the movie industry, or is that kind of who you know, Hollywood type of vibe?
It's how you get in. It's hard to get in, but you got to find your way in the same way that, and everyone gets in a different way. Maybe you know someone, you got to find your way in. This is the film industry. There's not an office you can walk up to, but you have the internet. I found hype with a magazine and mail in a phone. Fucking determination. So you have the motherfucking internet. If you can't figure this shit out, you're not going to survive on set. I got to be very real with you. This is not a, hey, do it for me business. This is figure the shit. It's figure it out. Because when I go to work, there is literally a stopwatch with thousands, tens of thousands of dollars connected to it. And if I go past this line, then it starts to stack and then double and then triple. And then there's police that come along and say, move this truck and turn it. Like, it is high levels of responsibility and on your feet and getting shit done. You feel me?
Yeah, so
if you can't figure out how to get in, you're not going to know how to fucking maneuver this shit.
So you get a timeline on your production, and if you don't meet that timeline, there's fees that you have to pay out of your pocket?
Well, the production does, but again, if the production has to pay, if my call time is at 8, and we said we are going to be packed up and driving away, at 8 a.m. we're going to show up, and at 8 p.m. we're going to be done. But then 8 p.m. comes around, and not only am I not packing my trucks, I'm nowhere near to packing my trucks. I need 2 more hours. Those 2 more hours, well, we made a deal that now I'm going into overtime.
Okay.
Overtime lasts this long. But what if I need more time past the overtime? Well, now I can go the double overtime. I go the triple overtime. Then I get a meal penalty. Well, everyone's supposed to eat now. I can't stop to eat because we're almost done. Okay, well, if we're not going to eat, we get meal. Now everyone gets more money.
Mm.
You feel what I'm saying?
Yep, yep.
This is how this shit works. There's consequences. So, again, if you can't figure out how to get into the film industry, you're not going to survive in the film industry.
Hmm.
I don't know. I wish I could tell you there's some way, but you've got to figure this out. This part of getting in, this is, did you ever in school, in grade school, do the incubate eggs and then you see like a chick?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or anything like that?
Yep.
Okay. And do you remember the teacher said, don't help them out of the egg?
Right.
If a chick can't make it out of the egg, it can't make it out of the egg. If you help it out, there's a double. If it's not strong enough to get made, it can't make it out, and it wouldn't be... If you help it out and it wasn't strong enough to make it out, it wouldn't be strong enough to live. And then if you help it out, if it was strong enough to make it out, but you helped it out, it didn't develop the strength it needed to live, and it's going to die as well. So there's no scenario in you helping that chick out of the egg that is good for the chick.
Now, I'm glad you said that, because I said that on Instagram a few weeks ago. Like, sometimes you can actually hurt somebody by trying to help them. Sometimes it's like you're enabling people and you're helping them. You're actually hurting them because they're skipping vital steps that are needed. Like, you're taking them from point A to point Z, but by doing that, they're skipping that journey. Yeah.
And once you leave them by themselves, they won't survive.
Yeah.
It's the egg analogy. It's the one to use, and it's the one for these kids. If I help you, if you're good enough to do this, you can do it on your own. And if you're good enough to do this and I help you, I'm going to hurt you. You're not, like you said, those steps you're going to miss. The egg analogy is the best analogy, which is like, I don't like saying too much about what I would do. You know what I'm saying? I can tell you my story about what I did.
Yeah.
And you figure it out now.
No, I respect that. Because it's like everybody's journey is different. And your journey that you did 20 years ago is completely different than somebody that's going to do it right now in 2020.
You got to get out of the egg on your own. Once you're out of the egg and I see you on set, well, now we're in a different conversation. You made it here. You're good enough to be here. You're in the league. Now this whole thing going on. You know what I mean? But till then, that they don't just hand you shit, and you shouldn't want it. It's not going to... I get the dream, bro. I was young. I remember when I was dropping a package off the Puff, and I had my tape. Hey, can I show you something? Yeah. And you look, now I had like this video opera, and like this shot it on film. Like, I'd come up. It wasn't my old little, you know what I'm saying? It was some artsy fartsy cool kid shit. And you looked at it. What's your name? Little X. Cool. Later on in the future, we worked together and did kinds of work. I've done all kinds of stuff with Puff, and you know what I'm saying? He's a great inspirational guy. Again, relationships that you have 20 years later. You know what I'm saying? 20 years later, still know the guy. But he didn't see my work. He said, oh my God, and of course I want that. Who wouldn't want to be fucking treated like a genius? But it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes the guy will, cool. And later, you don't know how this is all going to work out. But following your interests, following your passion, studying your craft, all till now, I still watch, especially on YouTube. YouTube, if you want it to be, is a film school now. Yeah. There's people who do very in-depth, especially now that I deal in story. For me, the new level is story structure, character development, the things that make you want to watch a show, past the visual. And I study it. And YouTube has tons of great people that have really insightful ideas about this. And then I also read the books about it. And I do my homework. This time in quarantine, I've been studying my craft. If I'm bored, I can watch these videos about my craft. So following your interests, studying your craft, hustling, you know what I mean? And doing that work. So then you're ready. When that moment happens, then you're ready. But that's information I can give you. As far as like how I would use Google, I'm not telling you like that. If you had it figured out that you should have your shit on your phone.
So what's next? What's next for you as far as like are you moving more into the movies or Netflix streaming, like music,
sitcoms, TV series?
Where do you see your own personal?
I'm working on all the stuff. I'm a director now in all the categories, right? So there's movie stuff, there's goals and conversations, and TV, there's goals and conversations, and music videos, goals and conversations, commercials, goals and conversations, right? So all this stuff is going on. What I'm really happy about is that on the commercial side, I did a short film for Pierre Moss, the clothing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We went to his fashion show in Brooklyn.
What's his name?
Kirby.
Kirby. Yeah. One of our shout out to Valencia. We went to his fashion show.
Amazing fashion show.
In BK, yeah.
Amazing fashion show. Yeah. So I wrote and directed a short film for him. Technically, it's a fashion film. And here we go.
Yeah.
This was a low budget project. Okay. We had nowhere near the kind of money, but here to entertain. Here was the passion, the studying of story structure. The Kirby and I really working together, yeah. Right? Technically, I'm still working for him. Though the money's not the thing that makes it, it's his thing. feel me?
Yeah.
But we're collaborating, doing this thing together. And that was really one of the best client director. That experience was really the people working together to make something better. Always, no one get, that's mine. So now I get to, like, sometimes you'll get people that want to force their decision, as opposed to going with the best decision.
That's dope, because
it wasn't like that.
I just saw him with director credits. He just did Wale's new video.
So we make this thing. Now look, it's not, it's called Seven Mothers. You should check it. It's also on my page, but Pierre Moss Seven Mothers. And people cry when they watch this thing all the time, constantly. Right, it's a story about Kirby. His mother died when he was seven, and then these seven women raised him. And it's a story about family and but based in Black culture and the church. And I had something I wanted to say. It's something I show students because the story structure is textbook story structure, like I'm saying. So all these things, and we make this very low budget thing. And then when award season comes, because commercials is big on awards. Awards is a big part of commercials. And we're getting nominated for really prestigious awards. We're winning prestigious awards. Our little low budget short film is nominated beside Apple and Spotify and Tinder, like big over the top, big budget projects. And here's this one little fashion film that we did for probably a third of the money. But the philosophy, all the things we're trying to do, you know, entertain. And entertain people doesn't always mean it's fucking a fucking show and feel great. Sometimes entertainment is breaking your heart and making you think about someone you love and think about how a spirit can still speak to you from beyond the grave and how the universe brings things together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That can still be entertainment. You're really tugging on your heartstrings. So we're there to entertain. We're here to do that work and all that studying. And it ain't easy to go being nominated beside an Apple project or Christian Dior or, you know, Tom Ford. These ain't little brands. These ain't little things. But with the right philosophy, with the right approach, with the right heart, with the right collaboration, with all these things going the right way, your little project can make big waves. And so that is something, as a, you know, with Superfly and the TV shows, like, I've got a lot going on, man. I'm a working director. But it's projects like that that really mean something heartfelt. And then the payoff isn't in the pay, and we weren't calculating it. We weren't making like, ah, then we win the awards. And then we just made it. And then the return was that.
So before we wrap it up, I wanted to talk. I know Troy had questions about the
because some of the things you're doing now, man, I thought were just amazing. Operation Prefrontal Cortex. I know that's something that you're very passionate about and studying the brain studies. And, you know, there were some events that happened in your life that kind of triggered it as well. And I heard that there's work that you're doing in prisons and you want to incorporate it in schools. And that's something that I've seen in my school, in my district for sure, is like we have like this meditation thing. We call it the mindfulness room. And hopefully it becomes something that gets picked up by other school districts because it is helpful for kids. I wanted you to talk about your experience with that.
I mean, look, George Floyd, I think it might be his last video, it's him talking about the violence in our community. And yeah, we have a beef with the police. The whole world has, you can see the police are out of control. But we got something else. Our young men are killing each other everywhere you go. Toronto is on fire with the gun violence. And they don't care. Literally the last shoot, the day that George Floyd was killed, a 21-year-old named Houdini got killed out here. When you see the security footage, when they start shooting at each other, there's a 6-year-old standing in between. Downtown Toronto in the middle of the day. You feel me?
Yeah.
And it's that fucking serious. But we've done police. We've done all the programs. And I was shot myself in my back. The bullet went through two people and hit me. Luckily, a shift in my body weight might have been the difference between a whole other kind of life of regular hospital visits and what happened to me. They cut it out and I walked up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I started pulling together. I'm science-minded, we could say. I'm interested in science. And I remember I'm reading something one day and I come across some something in some science journal and say, oh, the criminal mind isn't like the normal brain. The criminal brain and the normal brain aren't the same. And I read it and it says the prefrontal cortex is smaller. That's decision making. And the amygdala is bigger, and that's emotional control. So, okay, I read that. And then I'm reading something else, and it says something about children who are abused, and something happens to their brain, and the prefrontal cortex is small. And then I read something else, and it's meditation changes your brain. It makes your prefrontal cortex bigger, and it makes your amygdala smaller. I'm like, hold on. That's the opposite of the violent brain. And I gather these studies together, and it's very, very clear. Childhood abuse and neglect change how the brain develops. Children who are abused and neglected, their prefrontal cortex is too small, their amygdala is too large. Chronic stress changes the brain. People who are stressed out, their prefrontal cortex shrinks. Their amygdala gets big. Violent and aggressive people, their brain has distinct differences in the average person. Their prefrontal cortex is too small, their amygdala is too big. Obvious connection.
And the prefrontal cortex is the part that decides decision making, right?
Yes, and the amygdala is the part of the brain that
regulates
emotion.
Emotions.
And it's also the part of the brain that decides fight or flight.
Mm-hmm. So this is when people are making decisions based off of emotion and not rational decisions. If they have,
it's very interesting. Part of the real decision making is the brain filters it. But your amygdala decides if I'm gonna run away or I'm gonna hit that blackout moment and just react. Because not only does the amygdala make the decision, it also can turn off your prefrontal cortex. So literally, you're not making a decision.
Right.
So this is what's happening. And then if you are constantly stressed, say you live in a bad neighborhood or you have a dangerous job, and says we live in danger all the time. We don't got time to figure shit out. We gonna fight, or we're either gonna run or we gonna fucking fight. It locks it in. The hippocampus is learning and memory. The amygdala will lock in your fight or flight response. So you just fight it. You feel me? So there you go. But meditation does the opposite. It gives volume to your prefrontal cortex and shrinks your amygdala and gives volume to your hippocampus. All the parts of the brain, when you meditate, the parts of your brain that should be big get big. The parts of your brain that should be small get small. Like working out. You work out all the time. The muscles that should get, the muscles get big, the waist gets small, the stomach gets small. You know what I'm saying? It's the beauty of exercising. This is exercising your brain. Okay? And you do it through meditation. When you meditate, then when they bring meditation, like in the schools, violent schools, everything changes. The suspension stops. The violence stops. The grades go up. The physicality all the time. Maximum security prisons. The most violent prison in Mexico. They start meditating. The violence goes down. Their awareness rises up. All these great things. Even with police officers meditate. They de-escalate more. They're not as violent. This is the key to reducing the violence in our community. In general, in our cities, our plan, because Operation Prefrontal Cortex, our mission is to reduce violence, gun violence, mass violence, police violence, with meditation. We need to be in our schools. Our schools saves our next generation, right? The worst hood in the world, they start meditating, that school's going to change. We've changed the generation once those kids have those tools. Because once we get past the idea or past the fact that the shape of their brain no longer is susceptible to violence and aggression, then we start getting into better use of existing knowledge, better memory, better friendships, better social skills, better physicality. They start becoming better, fuller, happier human beings from the meditation. You know what I'm saying? We need to get it into our community groups, into communities that are affected by violence. We all know this. The whole hood isn't full of fucking gunmen, but you grew up around it. Shit's dangerous. You've lost friends. You've been too many close calls, shit like this. You've lost friends. There's a lot of trauma living in these neighborhoods because of the violence. Meditation can help you with this. So we need the community groups. We need the correctional system. And that is, we need to be in those prisons helping these guys figure the shit out so they can actually come out of jail and live a good life. Everyone's supposed to be able to live a good life. That's the dream, right? Not just being rich and following, but that you live a fulfilling life, that you, And then there is the streets, which needs another program. It's a mentorship program called Advanced Peace to bring that in. If you go to advancedpeace.org, you'll see a very effective program, mentorship program to reduce violence that will save money drastically from city budgets because of the cost of shootings. It's $1 million a shooting.
Yeah.
Right. And then we need to get our police meditating. We need, police need to meditate. Beyond, forget the bad cops, forget the white supremacists, and that's one we didn't really touch on, but white supremacists have infiltrated law enforcement worldwide. That's, the FBI says that, not just me. It's not a conspiracy. That's what the FBI found. So let's put that to the side. Let's talk about cops who actually, they joined because they wanted to do something good. Well, the stress of the job is changing their brain, shrinking their prefrontal cortex. It's enlarging their amygdala. It's locking in their fight or flight response. It's making them more aggressive. It's making them more violent. I can tell you, man, when you have a job where it is dealing with people who have been traumatized, it's a heavy weight. I do a day of meetings with, the mother that lost her son, the guy who lost, the people that are really living the life. It's crushing, it's hard, it's heavy, and that's a day of meetings. Let alone being a social worker, and your job is to like get off the phone with the girl who's abused and then go no funk. Like at some point the brain says, I can't care anymore. I can't take this weight. Mm-hmm. Meditation can relieve that. But again, being a police officer, cops go through some shit, man. They go through some shit, and the brain reacts to that. So the shit's dangerous out here. We ain't got time to be nice to people. Meditation can relieve that. It can get their brain back to a function. They become better police officers with that. So this is how we make big, big changes. This is how we, at least in our community, as we have to deal with systemic racism, we have to deal with everything the system throws at us, meditation can give us the ability to deal with the system, to navigate it better, right? And then hopefully do the work to undo the way the game is rigged against us. But right now, we've been doing it the other way. We've been trying to unrig the system, and we got to do us first. Because we don't know. You see what's happening with the system. The whole shit is fucking wobbling. This should look shaky right now. So it's how you do it. How are you going to handle yourself in chaos? This is what meditation can help us do.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in meditation as well. And a lot of times people have the misconception about meditation because they think that it's you gotta like sit Indian style. I mean, that's one part of it, but like for me, like every morning before I get up, I just lay in bed still for about 20 minutes, sometimes even up to an hour, and I just think. And it's like the best feeling in the world to actually like visualize, think, and it's like, it starts my day off a lot better than if I had to get up and just rush and just throw clothes on and run out the house, which most people, that's their daily routine. And it's like you're already starting your day off on a whole different frequency. So I know firsthand the benefits of all of that, as far as, thinking about things and putting things in the universe and meditating and visualizing, and all of these things are extremely important.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we don't really take it serious. We kind of think like, we have a lot of ignorant beliefs and superstitions.
I saw you, and I struggle like being still and not having 1,000 thoughts going. I saw that you use music as one of the key factors to help you do that. And I saw like when you did it through speakers, your brain waves were at like 18%, but when you had headphones in, you saw a drastic difference. Which is key. Like I was like, I gotta try that.
Have to go.
Yeah. I didn't try it yet. I said I have to try it.
We do. When you have the headphones on, you find the right music, it just becomes very encompassing. And then not every meditation. I have guided meditations on my page you should check out. And that is the meditation technique I use is a lot of visualization. And as you calm you go through your body and relax your body, you relax your mind, and then when you get really relaxed, then you begin to visualize goals. And it's very helpful. It's very helpful. It's good to, it's a good place to be, visualizing where you want to be in your mind in this calm state, and you can see the life you're trying to build for yourself. And then, we can have a debate whether does the visual actually, the law of attraction, or is it just help you see what you want and know what you want? You know what I'm saying? No matter how you cut it, it's a good place to be, and it helps you as you go to execute.
Director X, man, a visionary in more ways than one.
That's a fact. It's been a pleasure, bro. Yeah, man, I'm glad we got a chance to do this. Hopefully we can connect in person sometime. Yeah, we definitely got to come to Toronto once this whole thing is over.
The king of Toronto was opening his doors for us, I'm sure.
Yeah. Shout out to everybody.
Ready, let's get it. I'm out here.
Nah, for sure. Anything that you want to make the people aware of? Anything you got going on, initiatives, anything like that?
Yeah, so Operation Prefrontal Cortex, our website is, you know, op-pfc.com, and our Instagram page is at op.pfc. Give us a follow, you know, start meditating yourself. If you don't know how to meditate, Google it. Go to YouTube and search guided meditation. Google how to meditate. Download an app like Headspace or Calm. There's lots of ways to learn about meditate. And again, bro, with all this technology around you, if you don't know how to, you know what I'm saying? If you want to do something, you can learn how to do it all on your own nowadays. So use that, use the power in your hands and learn how to, life will just become better the more you do it.
That's a fact. Troy, housekeeping items?
Yeah, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. Y'all know that's our Proud to Pay program, where we have 5 different tiers. Each tier gives you a different thing, whether it be discounts on our merch or access to our university, EYL University, our biggest and the biggest community for financial literacy and entrepreneurism. It's been going crazy. Like I said, every week we provide more content. There's over 70 different webinars that you can learn from and share. And shout out to everybody in our private real estate group. It's been amazing, man. We're right now in the midst of reading the 12-week year, and that's been going crazy. So shout out to everybody that's been part of that.
Yeah, and shout out to Canada. We're coming to Canada. We're going to do a networking event.
Believe
we're
that.
Do a podcast and a workshop as soon as we get clearance. And we're not going to do the Christopher Columbus thing. We're going to bring people from Canada that can actually talk about, you know, real estate from a Canadian perspective and all of that. We're not just going, you know, force our American ways on people. But yeah, man, once again, it's been a pleasure. Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.